for a special edition news magazine on FM 94.3 KNIA in Indianola. This is the Indianola At-Large City Council and Bob Kling Forum being held at the Black Box Theater on the Simpson College campus. Now let's meet the candidates on KNIA Indianola.
Welcome to this special edition KNIA Radio News Magazine, the 2021 Indianola City Council At-Large Seat Forum. We're joined by our host, Seth Anderson, director of the Culverville Public Policy Center here at Simpson College, and our moderator for tonight's event, Amy Duncan, with the Indianola Independent Advocate.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Seth Anderson. I'm director of the John C. Culver Public Policy Center here at Simpson College. We are pleased to host this evening's forum featuring the two candidates for at-large seats on the Indianola City Council, Randy Bickham and Steve Richardson. The Culver Center is co-sponsoring tonight's forum with the Indianola chapter of the American Association of University Women, the Indianola Independent Advocate, and KNIA Radio, which is broadcasting live from Simpson College this evening. A reminder that there have been some changes to the early and absentee voting period in Iowa that take effect with the upcoming November 2nd municipal and school elections. Early and absentee voting starts 20 days before Election Day, which is October 13th this year. You may vote early in person at the Warren County Auditor's Office, or you can request an absentee ballot by mail. Absentee ballot requests can be submitted now, but the county auditor must wait until October 13th to start mailing those absentee ballots out to voters. All absentee ballot requests must be received by the county auditor by October 18th, and those ballots must be returned to the auditor by 8 p.m. on election night, Tuesday, November 2nd, when the polls close. Postmarks are no longer considered, so make sure to mail back your absentee ballot in plenty of time, or drop it off in person at the Warren County Auditor's Office. And of course, you can always wait until Election Day and cast your ballot in person on November 2nd. The polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Election Day. If you need to find your polling place, please visit the Warren County Auditor's website or the Iowa Secretary of State's website. And if you need to update your voter registration address or request an absentee ballot, we have those forms available at the table next to the door. Tonight's forum will be moderated by Amy Duncan, publisher of the Indianola Independent Advocate, with assistance from two Culver Fellows who will serve as timekeepers, Abby Fry and Noah Trujillo. Amy developed the topics and questions for tonight's forum based on suggestions that were submitted in advance by voters. The candidates have not seen the questions in advance. And just a reminder to please silence your cell phones if you haven't done so already. It's now my pleasure to hand the floor over to Amy Duncan, who will review the ground rules before introducing and posing questions to our candidates.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you to all of those who have helped make tonight possible, including the voters who are watching and listening. But most of all, thank you to our candidates. Running for any office is hard work, and we are grateful to them for taking this on. So please, this evening, let's make sure we all give both of our candidates the respectful attention they deserve. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for an introductory statement before we start with questions. They then will have 2 minutes each to respond to each question. Our candidates tonight are Randy Bickham and Steve Richardson. Randy, we will go first in alphabetical order, so Randy will have the first introductory statement.
Well, thank you. So, as has been mentioned, my name is Randy Bickham. I'm going to start out with the introduction to give you a little bit about me, some of my background, different things along this lines, as I'm certain we'll get into more topics about what's going on with the community. I grew up in a very small agricultural community, went to college at Boise State University, where I graduated in communications. Got married while I was going to Boise State. By the time I actually was able to graduate from Boise State, we had our sixth child, and the seventh one was not very far away from being born after my graduation. So I have a fairly large family. All of my children graduated from Indianola High School. While they were going through high school, I went back to school many years later and got a master's, an MBA from the University of North Alabama. So I've been asked several times, what prompted me to run for office. Never ran for office before, never been into politics. I've gone to some of the different caucuses and different things like this, so I've been involved as a community member, but never on this side of the fence. So as I started to think about that, what prompted me to be able to go into politics, to try and serve here on the city council? And it really came down to my family. I want to create an environment and a community that is appropriate and that is still continues to be a wonderful place for people to live. That's really what prompted me. I wanted to be able to give back to Indianola, which has been a wonderful home for my family. Thank you.
Steve.
Thank you, Amy. And I would like to thank the Independent Advocate, KNIA, and the Culver Center, along with the American Association of University Women, for sponsoring this tonight. I think it's a great opportunity for people to have listen to what the candidates believe and what they think as far as issues in the campaign. As I look out on the crowd tonight, I see many of you I've known for years. I have been here most of my life. There were a few years where, after I was born, my parents moved to West Des Moines and then came back to Indianola. My family, my extended family, my mom's side, the Auberts, we've been here for many, many years. And so we moved back in 1959, and in fact, my wife Deb and I live in the house where I grew up. My mom and dad had built in 1959. There were a couple owners in between us, but that's fine. Having grown up in that neighborhood, a lot of the neighbors were parents as well. If you grew up in the 50s, which many of you did not, but when you grew up in the 50s and 60s, your neighbors were your parents, and there's only five people left in the community or in that neighborhood, the original owners. They're all widowed, men and women. There's two guys and three women. They're the original owners, and I often think of them when we talk about issues here in the community, too, and those kinds of things. I was a council member here in Indianola in 1990 to 96. I was in the state legislature. I resigned my seat in 96 to serve in the state legislature. I was on the Indianola City Council then again in 2006 and 2010. And during that time, I voted for additional fire EMT folks, additional police officers, worked heavily on the K-9 unit, the curbside recycling program, actually raised taxes in the 90s when we were booming as a city and lowered them when we had the housing bust in 2007 and 8. Street replacement program, worked with that, joint city-county fuel facility, that's probably where I'm most pleased. Thank you, I appreciate the opportunity.
Our first question will go to Steve Richardson. Describe what you see as Indianola's role within the broader Metro Des Moines community.
Oh, that's an interesting question, Amy. Indianola has always been kind of, in some ways, off on itself, by itself, for many, many years. When we started growing in the 70s and 80s, it became more important for us to be involved with a lot of things that go on with the metro. We have a lot of things that we take part in. I know we have different committees that council members and staff sit on in the Des Moines area. Metropolitan Planning Organization, Bravo, just to name a couple that are part of that process. We need to know what this folks in the metro area are doing. We need to be able to plan in case there's things that we need to work with. A couple of things that I think also are important. We just had a couple of weeks ago the KnotFest here. I don't think there's probably too many people here that went. But it had 30,000 people here. I volunteer a couple of days a week at the Brass Armadillo, and on Sunday I was there. I ran into about 30 people that had been there. They had great things to say about it for the most part, except for some long lines. And I think that's an example because they had to use busing. They had to do a lot of things with the metro. It was an organization that we had to work through a lot of different things, I'm sure. I know that there was a lot of volunteer time put into that. Just recently, in Indianola, we had the Pro Disc Golf Tour here in Indianola as well. About 3,000 people went to that. Had about 146 participants, a couple of which were from Indianola, to be honest with you. We would have had more people attend than they could have, but except we didn't have enough volunteers because they had a couple of other events in Des Moines at the time. And so they're looking forward to coming back to Indianola in August next year. Doug Scholl and I have been working hard to bring those folks back. We just got word that they will be back next August. I think it's the 19th to the 22nd. So we hope to bring a lot more folks back into Indianola for restaurants, hotels, everything else.
Randy.
Well, I was able to go out there for that disc golf event. It was actually a wonderful event. It really characterizes, in my opinion, some of the things that Indianola can offer to the Des Moines metro area. Housing, things like this in the Des Moines area. A lot of jobs are coming to Des Moines. A lot of people are moving to Des Moines. Housing rates are going up. Crime going up. A lot of different adverse things happening in the metro area. A lot of really, really good things happening there as well. So, but what Indianola offers is we really are our own community. We are our own town. We're not being absorbed by the metro. We haven't, the boundaries haven't meshed together with us. We have a distinct identity. And I think it is important for Indianola to keep that identity, that we are a community, that we're not part of the metro. Now, we can offer some wonderful things, that we can bring people down from Des Moines. They can come down and they can see what a wonderful town that we have. An example is what Steve mentioned, that disc golf event. It's a wonderful event. It's great to hear that they'll be coming back again. It's the Knotfest activity. Not my style of music necessarily, but it brought a lot of people to our community. The Balloon Festival, these events that we have. Back whenever we get to have Bike Night again, we bring a lot of people down. They get to see what a wonderful town that we have. People get to interact with us from the schools, different things like that. So while I think that we need to be watching and aware of what's happening up in the Des Moines Metro, I think that as a town, we need to remember that we are a community, that we're independent, we have wonderful things here, and we have an area that people really want to be and where people would like to live. Thank you.
Our next question will go first to Randy. When looking at the budget for the city of Indianola, what do you see as items you might want to change, either to increase or decrease?
So I was reviewing the budget just in the last few days, going through some of the different items that are in it. Indianola has done a remarkable job with what we have and our debt ratios. Ryan Waller has done a magnificent job in helping keep the Indianola fiscally really where we want to be. As we look through that, one of the things that I want to see, I don't want to see taxes going up. I would like to see us being able to take the money that we have coming in, working with that budget that we have, and appropriating the funds to the areas that need it. Now, we have a lot of different things that we're going to be needing to do over the next several years. We have an old infrastructure that we're going to need to be looking at. We've got to do some improvements there. We have a lot of other areas, construction projects that are going on right now. So we need to look at ways that we can continue to bring money into the city so that we can afford to be able to do these projects. But there are ways that we can do that without impacting the taxes for the community. So it's a matter of looking at the budget, putting the money where it needs to be, and making certain that we have that responsibility. Now, as a member of the community, I get to pay the taxes too. Not one of my favorite things to do every year when it comes time to write that check to pay the taxes on my house. But I also look at what those taxes do provide for us, that we have a vibrant community, that we have an infrastructure that we're improving, that we're providing services for the members of the community. So it's a matter of looking at that and balancing those items with what funds that we have that are available to us.
Steve.
Thank you. I think there's a lot of folks in here, but I think the council and the city manager have done a great job of highlighting and pointing out the areas that we really need to work on our budget and make sure that we address issues that are there. In the mayor's forum the other night, streets and sewers were part of the main discussion. You can't argue with that, or it's a lot of our streets. I bicycle every morning generally. Streets are in pretty bad shape in a lot of places. We talked, I know the city council and the staff has talked about doing asphalt overlays. That's something we did in the 1990s. We did 95. We did an asphalt overlay, I think it was, on West Iowa Street between Howard and I think D Street, maybe Buxton and D Street. The idea was that we'd go in and try to do that and save some money rather than a replacement. Engineers told us at the time that that would only last about 15 or 20 years. Talking with Ryan at the City Hall, he said that I think that was replaced in 2016, so you got about 21 years of life out of that. The one thing we didn't do at that time, though, was grind the acid or grind the concrete. I think that's something that City Council is currently looking at. What that does is it allows it to open up that concrete, but more importantly, it allows us to go in and fix those joints and take care of those things and stop that movement between the cracks of that concrete. And it should allow that asphalt overlay to survive a lot longer. And also talking with Ryan, a couple of issues that came up was the road use tax funds don't fully fund our street repairs projects. We're underfunded about $500,000 every year. We need to make sure that that's done as well. We also need to take a look at how we're going to spend the money with the American Recovery Act and how that's taken place. I think we need to look at that as well, and I'm running out of time, so thank you.
Next question goes to Steve first. The City of Indianola appoints, but does not control, the Indianola Municipal Utility Board. There have recently been contentious meetings between the IMU Board and City Council. Should anything change between IMU and the Council, and if so, what? And specifically to Steve, your wife serves on the IMU Board. What challenges does that present, and how will you face them?
Well, we can't build a wall in the house, that's for sure. But what I can tell you is this. Before I chose to run, and folks, I also want to make this very clear, nobody asked me to run. Deb and I have had this conversation for well over a year now, whether or not to run for certain offices. I retired in May of 2020, and so nobody's recruited me, and nobody, I'm not beholden to anybody for running for this office. We both asked for, and it's going to take a few seconds here, but we decided that we would go ask legal counsel, and we retained a lawyer to take a look at what, if I ran for different offices in the city, what that would do with her responsibilities and role with IMU. Basically, it came down to the fact that as a city council member, I would have to abstain whenever we're appointing people to the IMU board. As far as what's going on between the city and IMU and the seemingly lack of communication, I think a lot of it is it's just communication, period. I'm not saying what we did in the past was the right thing, but we used to meet with the IMU board as a whole, as a city council. We'd actually put tables out in front of the dais that the council sits on behind, and we would actually sit down, and the IMU board would be on one side, city council on the other side, managers of both there, and we work through the issues. We talk about things. We try to plan on what was coming up. We did that at least once a year, in some cases twice a year. I think it resolved a lot of the potential questions that either side may have had. I think it provided an opportunity for clear and vigorous conversation in some cases, but it also gave everybody a direction of where they were going. I'd like to see us do that again.
Randy.
Yeah, so I grew up, as I mentioned, in a small town, but my dad was an electrician working with the local power company there. I grew up going to substations. I grew up around the energy industry. It was part of pretty much my daily life. He was hardcore into ham radio, different things like this. So I was surrounded by that all my growing up years. As we look at the contentions and some of the disagreements that have happened between the IMU board and the city council, I think a large portion of it really comes down to some of the communication between the areas. You've got the IMU that they want, you know, kind of working as an independent organization. I've worked with companies that we were the subsidiary I understand what it's like to be kind of that subsidiary having to report to a parent company, that you've got things that you want to do, that you feel that this is the way that, you need to work with it, and then you're having to work with an outside governing body. So I understand some of the issues that may be coming up. With that background that I have with the electricity, I have been in the computer industry as a programmer and a lot of different things from an IT perspective for over 20 years, 25 years. I understand technology. I understand where we need to be going from that perspective. I understand the issues that are going to be coming up. The issues that I don't understand, I will learn about them so that the communication channels, as we're working with IMU, that we can have an open dialogue, that we're talking from the same reference point. With a degree in communications, a lot of the times that problems come as people are trying to talk about the same thing. They're saying they want the same thing, but they're approaching it from different viewpoints. And it's being able to understand where each other's coming from.
Randy, the city of Indianola is using local option sales tax money to help pay for the downtown streetscape project. Some in the community have argued that money was committed to the wastewater treatment plant. Do you support this use of lost money? And if not, how would you have preferred to fund streetscape?
Well, that one, we've got a lot of different opinions on that that people have. When the funds were originally set aside, there was indication that they wanted to be able to put the money all into this area. As I'm working through with the city council, one of the biggest areas that I'm going to be focused on is that if we make a communication that this is what we want to do, if we need to change that and go a different direction as a community, I want to be able to make certain that the community knows why we're making that change and what we're going to be doing with that, and looking for the input from the community so that we can move forward and make the best choices that we can for Indianola so that we have the items that we need. When we're looking at the streetscape project, there was a survey done several years ago throughout Indianola, and one of the items that came up that was a hot topic that came back was that we want to beautify Indianola and help make it look a lot nicer. The city took this opportunity. They had the funding available in this other area. The wastewater treatment plant had the money available, and so they were looking at saying, okay, we have the community saying we want to make this area beautiful, we want to be able to do this, we have this funding available, let's use this funding. Maybe the communication with the community members was not where it needed to be able to get that input and get their buy-in so that everybody understood why a decision policy was made and why a change happened. So with me, moving forward, it's really going to be about communication. Finding ways to get that information out. New avenues of being able to share that information so that we can make those decisions. Thank you.
Steve.
Thank you. I have supported streetscape. I actually am a partner in one of the buildings on the square. And I think it's important that the tenants that we have at that particular building have the ability to bring people into the community as well. And so I've been a supporter of that. I've also been a supporter of the LOST program in the sense that I've always thought that we have opportunities in the state of Iowa. In fact, I ran a couple of campaigns on that in the state legislature. But when we finally had the ability to have a LOST program for local projects, we know that as time goes on, the revenues from that will increase because every year you're taxed on a percentage. It's 1% of the sales of retail sales over certain things. Some things are exempt, some things aren't. So every year, as prices increase, especially as we've seen this last year, your revenue from that local option sales tax should also increase. And so what happens with that is you've got a source of revenue there that you can take a look at and say, okay, what are we going to do with that additional money? Part of the discussion I had with the city manager was maybe using some of that for the road use tax money that we're losing, maybe figuring out a way to do something with that. However, I was a full supporter at the time of using all that money at the wastewater treatment plant. That ship sailed. We're down the road now. So the bonds are going out. We're going to use that money, a certain portion of that money, to pay for those bonds. So we've committed that. But can we use additional monies in the future, portions of additional monies in the future for that? Maybe we can pay off some of those bonds early with some of that. Use the money in areas where we really need it, streets and sewers, finish the streetscape project. As far as additional funding for that, I'm not sure where you would have gone without raising taxes or doing something else. And so, you know, it was probably the use of the money. Wasn't it the original intent, but they had the money available. It's something they used at that point in time. Again, those decisions have already been made.
Time. Thank you. The next question goes first to Steve. City officials often point to the fact that Indianola did not raise its tax rate during the last budget process and point to growth as the reason for increased tax revenues. Some local residents, on the other hand, say they are paying more in property tax this year due to the increased property values and other factors. What would you say to a citizen who came to you with concerns about their property taxes in Indianola?
Well, as we tried to explain again the other night, there's actually three parts to the property tax system, and I don't want to get down in the weeds and the mundane wonkiness of this, so to speak, but you got three parts to it. You've got your assessments that the city, that the county puts on the homes. You've got the rollback that the state uses, and you've got the tax rate that the citizens of Indianola pay on a 1363 basis. So if two of those items go up and you don't do anything with the tax rate, by default, your taxes are going to increase. Simply from the fact that those two items go up, and so consequently my taxes are going to go up. If one of them goes down, chances are it may go down. My point with this is pretty simple. In the past, when I was on city council, we used that tax rate to vary. So with the year we had additional monies from some of the revenue that we would have had if one of those factors went up or both factors went up, we did lower some of the tax rate. You can fluctuate that tax rate on an annual basis. And that will then determine whether or not the city is charging their citizens more every year. So by keeping that tax rate level, and consequently the 1363 for a year, 2 years, 3 years, doesn't necessarily mean the property taxes aren't going to go up, because you got those two other factors there. So, what my suggestion is that as we've talked and folks have talked as well, you look at the budget, you give an idea to the staff of what kind of percentage you're willing to go with. Are you willing to raise taxes 4%, 3%, 10%, whatever the case is? Again, we'd only be one vote on the council, but the bottom line is you make that decision, and then the staff goes back and comes back and says, these are our priorities. It's pretty easy to do. Thank you.
Randy.
Yeah, that's, you know, how much I have to pay for taxes on my house is always my favorite topic of conversation. And, I look at it as the people in my neighborhood have, some of the homes have sold, and I look at the appreciation of my house value, and I think it's great, you know, if I was to sell my house, but I'm not planning on selling. I want to stay right where I am. And, really don't want to be paying more than what I originally paid. Unfortunately, that's not something that is the reality that we get to live with. Our homes are appreciating in value. As the community grows, people move in, home prices are going up. Fortunately, we're not going up at the rates of some of the neighboring communities, that we have a modest growth. And with that is trying to keep some of those income taxes, the house taxes and different things like that, a little bit closer to where they were several years ago. As Steve mentioned, there are several factors that go into those prices. The tax rates may not be going up from the city, but we've seen increases that have come from the county. We see increases because our homes appreciate, our home assessed values are not set by the city, they're set at the county level. So one of the things that we can do is we can try to work with the county to make certain that our home values are being appraised appropriately. But the biggest avenue that we can do is look at the ways that we're spending the money and the money that we have coming in, and look at, are there ways that we can change some of that tax structure so that maybe we can reduce taxes in one other area while we don't have a lot of control in some of the others. The real idea is we know it's your money, and we want to make certain that we're making the best use of it and not taking the most of it.
Thank you. Thank you. The next question will start with Randy. What can the city do to better care for our environment and mitigate the effects of climate change?
My favorite answer with that would be build lots of parks, lots of bike trails. I also like to bicycle. I'm outside all the time running or bicycling, just doing different things. So I would love to be able to say, we want to have a lot of parks within the community. That really does a lot to help offset some of the things that we're going to be impacted from climate change. We're a small community. A lot of people can walk. I see lots of people out walking around town. While it's not a major transportation source, it's kind of neat to see the new scooters that are coming out, the electric scooters. You'll see some of those around town. Those type of things can impact it. One of the other areas we have that we could be looking at is a little bit more in the way of some kind of encouraging some form of public transportation within the community. Really what I see is it's not so much, we'll have some of it as far as getting around town, but a lot of it are the ways that we can increase public transportation between Indianola and Des Moines for those that are commuting back and forth, different areas like that. From a parks perspective, Indianola is doing pretty well with the number of parks that we have. We are slightly below the metro average with the number of parks. So I would love to see the ability to be able to increase that. The problem is that takes money or donations or different things like this to be able to do that. So we would have to be able to look at where we are from a financial standpoint to be able to encourage that. A lot of that can happen as we have new development coming in that we can put conditions, such as we're building new homes or new areas, that we increase the amount of green space that we have, increase the number of bike trails, increase the amount that the people can be outside and enjoy the environment. Yeah. Thank you.
Steve.
Thank you. Yesterday I met with Mike Metcalf at the Indianola Municipal Utility Electric Facility out on East Iowa. Talking with Mike about a wide range of things, and I would encourage council members and potential candidates to do the same, simply from the fact that there's a lot of information. If you haven't talked to those folks lately, there's a lot of things going on. Mike mentioned to me yesterday that the group that they purchased a lot of electricity from, Mean, is where they are currently working to reduce the greenhouse gases that they're using. They figure that they'll be off of coal in a number of years. I don't remember the exact year that he quoted me. And they're also looking at solar options. I know there's a sustainable group here in the community that has been pushing a lot of different options. And one of the things that Mean has been talking about has been creating solar fields and the opportunity to go solar to lower the greenhouse gas emissions that we create when we generate that electricity. The other thing I would mention, too, is the city is involved in a new wastewater treatment plant, and that's always been an issue in the community for a long time because at times of heavy rains and stuff, we'd have to release effluent into the streams and things, and that's not good for the environment. This new wastewater treatment plant should take care of a lot of those factors, and that will be something else as well. One of the things that IMU does offer is energy audits, and you can always ask them to come in and look at your house and find ways to reduce electricity and heat and gas usage. I think that's really important as well. We are losing a lot of ash trees in the city of Indianola, as you well know, and I think that we can start looking at maybe, the tree planting. One last thing on public transportation, and Randy brought this up. We tried to, there's been options.
Time.
That, thank you.
Sorry.
Yes, we shut that one off, didn't we?
The next question goes first to Steve. Describe the decision-making and discussion process you will use on City Council. Where and when is the appropriate place for council members to talk about issues before them, and how is that similar to or different from what you see now?
Great question. One of the things that we've talked about, and a lot of people that I've door knocked and talked with, is that they just don't understand, and there's a lot of reasons for it, but they don't understand why there's not very little discussion during some of the council meetings on topics that are before the council. I'm going to go back here and say, well, back in the day, but we did have, I worked under two mayors, actually three, but I worked under two specifically that were very open with the public, George Latke and Jerry Kelly. And there were times with George when we would be in the middle of a very vigorous discussion, and he'd see somebody in the back of the room that was kind of fidgeting, and he'd call them up and ask them if they wanted to talk on the issue. And I'm not saying that's the right thing either, but my approach will be this. I do ask questions. That's what I've done throughout my political career to try to educate myself. A lot of times in packets and information, you don't get all of the information that you might have or have questions as you go through that process. I know that sometimes staff's not prepared to do that. They're not prepared to answer the question. It might be a question that maybe catches them off guard. And that's not my intent. My intent is not to embarrass anybody or do anything, but mainly to learn. And what we used to do is bring those questions back under old business a lot of times, and then discuss those questions again in public at the next meeting or during the council study session, and discuss those items so that people have a full knowledge, if they're watching on television or whatever the case is, have a full knowledge of what's going on and the decisions and how we reach those decisions. So that's the kind of thing that I would like to see us do if I'm on the council.
Randy.
Well, I would say the easiest way would be that if the other council members would disagree ahead of time, do everything that I recommend, that would make it...
That would make it easy.
I mean, it would just solve all the issues there, you know, just... We move forward with that direction. The real thing, though, is it's really listening. Listening to the other council members, listening to the people in the community, giving people the opportunity for them to speak and express their opinions. As a city council, we go into the council meetings, you try to be prepared for everything that's going to come. You know, you're going to research issues, try to understand so that when they're council and we're talking amongst everybody that's there in the meeting, that you're talking from an informed perspective. But oftentimes you don't get all of that information. That's where we really need to look to the people from the community to be able to get their input. We have a diverse population here. Lots of people, all spectrums of life, all ages, income levels, everything about all of us is different. But we all need to live together. And the city council needs to be working in that same format, that we need to work together, we need to live together, and we need to be looking to you as a community to be able to give us your input so that we can take that information and then hopefully we make the best decisions that we have, that we can, with the information. But it really comes down to communication. We need to be looking at new ways to be able to get that information out there. As I mentioned earlier, I've got a lot of technology background. Technology is changing radically. The ways that we can communicate today and gather information, we need to be utilizing those. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that you're there, but that there are other avenues that we can get that communication back and forth to people in the community, that we can get your input and understand what your desires are and work together to get what we need. Thank you.
The city is considering a potential new library and public administration building. Would you support this effort, and how do you think the city should pay for such a project?
I could potentially support that effort. I know that we're still in the research areas of that, trying to find out what's going to be the most financially viable for the community. Building a new facility, that's going to be expensive. Right now we have a couple other major projects that we've got in the works. I would love to say, hey, yeah, let's build this beautiful new building and house everybody in there and you know, make it a nice facility for the community to be able to use. Unfortunately, nobody wants their taxes to go up. So we do have to look at the funding that we have available. And we need to be able to make the best choice with what we have available. We need to look at, okay, are there ways that we can renovate the building? There are some costly repairs. The boiler's old, it's going out, there are roof repairs, there are different things that we need to do. the city hall. We're running out of space as we add staff in the police departments, the fire departments. Things are getting really tight, so we're going to have to be able to make the best choice that we can for the community with the money that we have available in the appropriate time frame. If we want to rush it, we may end up spending too much money. We need to be able to take the time to be able to get the information back, find out what is going to be most viable for us. Look at those. Maybe there are other areas that we can look within the community that we can find, okay, here's other space that we could use, that we can provide the resources that we need. I think a library is a very, very important aspect of the community, to be able to have that resource available for people. And we need to be able to have the facilities that are nice for people to be able to use. Same thing with our police departments, our fire departments, and our city hall. So it is balancing the needs with the costs. Thank you.
Steve.
Thank you. Well, I think that one of the things we've got to consider here is how you pay for it. We definitely need something different and new. I know that we're growing fast and quickly, and as the fire department expands and police department expands with staff and EMTs and fire marshals and everything else, and of course with community development and rental inspection program we have now, that there's going to be some need there. I think there can be some looking at some additional areas. Where can we find some space or something that might work? The bottom line is how to pay for it, and I think that's going to be the critical component here. I don't know. I've got to be honest with you. In my door knocking right now, I'm not sure bond issue would pass. I just got to be frank about it. People I'm talking with are not willing to go that far, and what I get back from folks as I knock on doors is that we've got a lot of projects going on right now. Let's finish up what we have right now, and then let's look at what we need to do down the road here. And I think that we've got to listen to some of that, because otherwise we're going to get ourselves out ahead of where our constituents are and not be able to rally them when we need them for certain things like bond issues or ways to fund and pay for these types of things. I do think there's options out there. Talking with some folks today, you know, not the best space, but a lot of big box stores. I know we don't have that here in Indianola, but a lot of big box stores have gone out of business. You know, there's things of areas, not saying we need to do this, but things like old Crossroads Shopping Center on the west edge of town, or the things that we could do there. Are there other things and other possibilities out there? We need to think outside the box. We need to figure out ways to do that. If we expand quickly and have to get there, then let's look at some other options.
Time's up, and I need to give Andrew just a minute.
You are listening to a KNIA Special Edition News Magazine, the 2021 Indianola City Council At-Large Seat Forum. Now back to tonight's moderator, Amy Duncan, with the Indianola Independent Advocate.
Steve, since we're here at Simpson tonight, it seems appropriate to ask a question about the relationship between the City of Indianola and Simpson College, which have shared space since 1860. What specific steps would you like to see the council take to strengthen the relationship between the city and the college to the mutual benefit of both?
Well, being an alumni of this institution and having many great educators here and people and part of our community, it's critical. It's part of our heritage. It's part of our fabric. And so we need to do what we can to work with Simpson College to attract students, make sure the students know that there's options to shop here in the community and stay in the community. And if, as I look around the room, I think there's a fair number of former Simpson grads that have maintained and kept Indianola as a home. That you go around town and talk with folks, and there's a lot of folks that are Simpson grads that stayed here after graduating, got jobs here or in Des Moines or somewhere else. I think one of the things that, and again, I hate to go back to what we've done in the past, but sometimes what we've done in the past isn't so bad. Maybe it's a good idea again today. We used to meet with some of the leaders of Simpson College on a fairly regular basis as a council, find out what was going on with them, what their needs were, where we were with the different things as a city council, and what maybe we could share and what maybe we could do. I don't think that's a bad idea. Communication, as mentioned already tonight, is critical on all levels. We've got We would do the same with a major employer. If they came in and said, look, we want to sit down, we want to find a way to expand, or we want to do other things, we'd meet with community development or Chamber of Commerce or somebody like that. I don't see there's any reason why we shouldn't be doing that with Simpson College. I think there's opportunities there. I would welcome those opportunities to talk. If there's things that we can share or do, whatever the case may be, then I think that would be well worth our time to explore. Maybe it's possible, maybe it's not. But I do think it's well worth our time to explore those kinds of options. Thank you.
Randy.
Yeah, it's too bad I didn't get that question first because Steve just stole my answer. So, really, I think that we do need to work with the relationships that we have with the college here. I remember when my kids were in high school here, you know, going to watch football games out here on the field, sitting in the freezing cold for the first track meet of the year that Simpson would sponsor, and inevitably it would be windy or rainy or something like that, and we'd be freezing out there. But it was a lot of fun, particularly because I could just walk down here from where my home is. A little farther a walk to get to the new facility. And I understand why the schools built that facility as the schools are growing and as Simpson improves. That we competing resources to be able to have those fields available. I understand as well that several years ago, some of the relationships between Simpson and the community suffered a little bit. Particularly with a lot of the disagreements between the community members and the college with what happened to the street out here in front of the school. For Simpson, it's a beautiful addition to their school to be able to unify their campus and to be able to allow that breakthrough within the community for them. I think that we need to continue to work with Simpson, and I think we need to build the relationships. I think we need to repair some of the damage that had happened several years ago. Simpson is an integral part of the community. It's a wonderful school, and I think that they offer a lot to the community, and I think the community can offer a lot back to Simpson, and it's a matter of communicating back and forth with them and working with them to develop for them, for the school, to help improve what they have available for them, but also for what the community can gain. It's wonderful to have some of the options that they offer for us here. Thank you.
Next, this question goes first to Randy. Currently, citizens who want to speak at council meetings have to fill out a form. If you want a public record, as simple as a list of candidates running for, say, city council, you have to fill out a request. Do you agree with these limitations, or should the city do anything to make the process easier for residents?
I think there are definitely ways that we can make the process simpler. I remember when I was first, contemplating running for office and wanting to know, who is going to be running, who's running, different things like this, and a lot of forms that would have had to have been filled out. Didn't want to take all the time for that, so I just emailed some of the current city council members and asked them directly. So as a community member, I fully understand that sometimes trying to get the information that you want is public record, and you've got to fill out 20 forms or something like this to be able to get the information. But as it is public record, on the flip side, your request for access should be public record, too. So, because, as a community, we need to be able to fully understand how that information is being utilized. You look at it from the perspective as a community member, it's like, well, why can't I just have that information? Well, if we have businesses or politicians that come in that they want that information, that they want to use it for some other purpose, we need to be able to understand where that data is going. But there are ways, from a technology standpoint, that we can make that process much easier. That you could go online and be able to request those processes. And to be able to download it, it'll track that you've made the request, and you can get that information without having to spend so much time. With the technology that we have today, there really are so many new ways that we can communicate. Everybody all over the place is walking around with a phone. It's become a part of our life. We need to be able to look at these ways to be able to get this technology, to utilize it, and there are cheap ways that we can implement it, and to be able to share that information so that people can get what they need without a lot of work and a lot of that, without a lot of the hassle. Thank you.
Steve.
Thank you. Had the chance today to talk with two wonderful women, and they kind of grilled me on a lot of things, and I appreciate the comments today, but One of the things that I mentioned to them today was, and I'll go back to the five original people that still own houses in my neighborhood, those folks are 85 years and older. They don't, and I appreciate what you say, but they don't use the internet. They don't go to websites. They don't do things along that line. Are they going to talk at council meetings? Chances are probably not, but the bottom line is there's a lot of information that the answer is go to our website and find it there. And frankly and honestly, there's just some folks that don't do that and can't and don't have the wherewithal to do that. So I think we need to make it accessible to all. Eventually that will phase out. I understand that. But for right now, I still think we need to maintain options for those folks. The other thing that I think we need to do is make sure that we've got the hookups, work with IMU to make sure we got the hookups with them so they can televise that on their TV side of things. MediaCom currently does that, I understand. And I think that's an important process. I did have a meeting with Mayor Pepper here about a week or so ago, and we talked about this very issue. And again, going back to the comments I made earlier about Mayor Kelly and Mayor Latke, when you got up and spoke in front of the microphone, you had to give your name and address, and that was about it. But and you know, maybe a few other comments, but it can be sometimes intimidating, especially for some folks that really have never spoken in front of a group of people before but have a burning concern. And they want to make sure that they have an opportunity to speak or do something or get involved or at least have an answer. And so I think it's really important that we go back to some of those things and allow people to speak in meetings easily.
This will be our last question. Steve will answer first. What do you think is the biggest challenge you will face if elected to city council, and how will you address it?
Well, the elephant in the room is the fact that there's a pretty good divide in our community among different groups of people. And I've always prided myself on the fact that I can work with about anybody. I've got supporters on both sides of the issue, and I know there's some rumors out there that, you know, I'm trying to get rid of our city manager and I'm trying to do this and that. Those are just rumors, and it's not true. I've had good relationship with our city manager, and he's always been very forthright and answered the questions. And staff has done the same thing. So this campaign is not about city manager. This campaign is about the city of Indianola and how we move forward in the future. Good city managers, good superintendents of schools, they all move on. If they're good, they're really good, and they move on. Or sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But they move on because they are good. And they look for other opportunities frequently, and so as a council, we have to be ready for that. But more importantly, I'm going to go back to the issue of the divide that divides us in the community. It's not healthy. We have a great town. We have a great community. We have great people. I respect everybody that's on the city council, and I respect everybody that's running for office, because to put your name on the ballot and put yourself out there is a big deal. And you have to have thick skin. And I really think that we need to work together in this community to pull together. We've got so many good things going on in this community. Let's highlight those things. Let's pull together. Let's work together. We can bring sides together. It may take some time, but we can do it. We can do it right. We can make this community even better for the future, for the people that are living here. Quickly, I met a lady that just moved here 6 days ago from Des Moines. Got to tell you, she's excited to be in Indianola. It was wonderful to talk to her. I think we've got some great opportunities here for those folks as well.
Randy.
Yeah, I would agree a lot with what Steve just said. I think that a lot of the issues that will be faced as coming into the city council really are coming because the community really is becoming more polarized. But I'm seeing that in the world in general. That, you know, as you just read the national news, you know, people are going extremes on both sides, and the contention that is happening within, the United States, within the world, and I'm seeing it down into our community as well. So the real struggle is going to be, how can we start pulling people back together? You know, I remember as a kid, small town atmospheres, the beauty of, you know, Mayberry. And Indianola still has a lot of that here within our community. We want to make certain that we don't lose that. So the biggest thing is, how do we look at ways to bring the community back together? I work as a project manager. I'm managing lots of different people, a lot of different projects, all the different times. I've got people living all across the United States. I've worked with teams in foreign countries. A lot of diversity, a lot of different backgrounds. And my job as the project manager is to bring all those backgrounds together into one cohesive unit so that we can get the project done and move forward. And that everybody, while it might not be their ideal solution, we come to an agreement that we can say, yeah, we can live with this and we can move forward without ripping each other apart and tearing each other down. So it really does come down to communication. It comes down to working with each other and knowing that we're all striving to make Indianola a wonderful place to live, that we want it to continue to be that way. So it's looking for those avenues for us to be able to work together and to share. Thank you.
I want to thank both of the candidates tonight for being here. I also want to thank Simpson College Culver Center, particularly Director Seth Anderson. Also, thank you to KNIA and the American Association of University Women for serving as co-sponsors. Again, don't forget to vote between now and November 2nd, and join us Monday at Trinity United Presbyterian Church at 7 p.m. to meet the candidates for the Ward 2 and Ward 4 seats. We'll be back at the church on October 21st for a forum for the 10 people running for Indianola School Board. All of these events will be broadcast on KNIA Radio and on Facebook Live on the Independent Advocate Facebook page. Last, but certainly not least, thanks again to all of the candidates running this fall, and thank you to the people who are here tonight to watch.
You've been listening to a KNIA Special Edition News Magazine, the 2021 Indianola At-Large City Council Seat Forum. I'd like to thank our host, Seth Anderson, the Culver Public Policy Center, Simpson College, the American Association of University Women, our moderator, Amy Duncan, with the Indianola Independent Advocate, our studio audience, and all of our radio listeners. And a special thanks to our candidates who have stepped forward to serve the community.